call to order the Commerce Committee. We do have a quorum. Our first item on the agenda will be approval of our minutes from March 1st of 2023. Representative Katiza Watun, do you want to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move approval of the minutes.
Representative Katiza Watun moves approval of the minutes for March 1st, 2023. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes for March 1st, 2023 are approved. We're going to note Representative Niska's strong objection to the minutes. Our first bill on the agenda is House File 1570 from Representative Katiza Watun. You want to move your bill, Representative Katiza Watun?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House File 1570 to be referred to the General Register.
Representative Katiza Watun moves House File 1570 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Representative Katiza Watun, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Members, House File 1570 is a statutory update to our credit card processing law regarding surcharges. 35 years ago, when the law was originally passed, there was no internet, and telephone calls used to be charged by the minute. Today, online sales continue to increase, and this proposal seeks to achieve parity between brick-and-mortar businesses and online and phone retailers. After a positive discussion and feedback from the retailers, the bankers, and the credit unions, this bill does not change or add any additional disclosure requirements on retailers who are already covered by current law. It merely applies this law to those merchants who sell online or by phone so that all retail transactions, including surcharges, are regulated in the same way. Mr. Chair, with that, I would yield my time to the testifiers.
All right. We do have one testifier who signed up, Andy Kozak. Mr. Kozak, state your name for the record. Proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Andrew Kozak, and I'm here today on behalf of American Express. I want to thank you, Representative Katiza Watun, for bringing House File 1570 to hearing. I'm here to support the bill, which, as the author explained so well, simply modernizes Chapter 325G.051 by applying credit card surcharge law to internet and phone retail sales. These transactions, as Representative Katiza Watun said, did not really exist back in the olden days, back in 1987, but are now a growing share of the market, of the retail market. And the online vendors who impose a credit card surcharge enjoy an edge over traditional stores because current law does not cover these new types of sales. And even if the current law did, even if it did cover these sales, the merchants, online merchants, they couldn't comply with the law because the language from 1987 simply doesn't translate into the modern world. So 1570, House File 1570 fixes the issue, puts all sellers on the same level, and without adding any new burdens to the existing to existing traditional in-store sellers. And we want to, I just want to add that the current law is among all the credit card surcharge laws across the country. Ours is probably the most merchant friendly because the 5% that it allows merchants to charge is, I believe, one of the highest, if not the highest, in the country. So we're not trying to change that. We're just simply trying to apply the law to everybody. That's what the bill's about. So we believe House File 1570 is fair to merchants. It helps consumers who shop online, and I hope it earns the committee's support. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any members of the public wishing to testify to this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Discussion to the bill. Representative Katiza Watun, any closing comments to the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. As we know, sometimes it does take the legislature a little while to catch up to technology and outside of Capitol life, and this is a good bill. I would appreciate your support.
Representative Katizu Witun renews her motion that House File 1570 be recommended to be placed in the General Register. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 1570 is recommended to be placed on the General Register. Thank you very much. We will next move to House File 1000 from Representative Brand. I will move that House File 1000 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Brand, make yourself comfortable and then proceed to your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, or good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing House File 1000 today in the Commerce Committee. Perfluoral alkyl and polyfluoral alkyl substances are also known as PFAS, also are known as forever chemicals because they are everywhere and they bind to molecules of soil and water. They were initially invented and made here in Minnesota. They were also unfortunately dumped here in Minnesota. Unsafe levels of toxic chemicals are present in rainwater throughout the globe, according to a new study published by the Journal of Environmental Science and Technology. These chemicals are found in our water, our fish, even our game species. Wisconsin had tested deer, ducks, and geese for PFAS, and as a result, issued a do not eat advisory for deer liver in Marionette, 55 miles north of Green Bay. According to the U.S. Appropriations Committee in the House, dated 3/24/21, in 1966, the FDA rejected a petition by DuPont to use PFAS as a food additive, citing liver studies. This means that some federal agencies knew about emerging risks of PFAS as far back as 1966. In 1999, 3M notified the EPA that PFOS accumulated in the bloodstream and provided data that indeed liver damage was confirmed in rats following exposure. In 2009, the federal EPA released a provisional health care advisory warning of exposure to toxic chemicals. In 2014, the European Chemical Agency Risk Assessment Committee classified these toxic chemicals as hazardous, characterizing it as a suspected carcinogen known to be toxic to reproduction. In 2023, the European Union is considering a ban of over 10,000 PFAS in Europe. There is solid evidence that PFAS exposure is harmful to human health and the environment. In fact, according to Colorado testimony in 2019 on Bill 19-1279, PFAS chemicals do not break down in the environment, are toxic to people and wildlife at very low levels. Ingesting even small amounts can cause cancer and other serious health problems. Exposure to PFAS is linked to kidney and testicular cancer, thyroid problems, pregnancy complications, high cholesterol, low birth weights, and immune system disorders. Firefighters and first responders are exposed to these chemicals at work, and nearly every American has a measurable amount of PFAS in their bodies. Folks, we find this in the cord blood of infants. We also find this in the breast milk that infants drink. It's everywhere, it's pervasive, and we must do something about it. The MPCA tested PFAS in groundwater at 101 out of 110 sites at the closed landfill program. PFAS was detected in 98 of those closed landfills. At 59 of those landfills, PFAS exceeds Minnesota Department of Health drinking water guidance rules. So we've had this problem in Minnesota for a very long time, and we haven't had the opportunity to address it until now. The writing is on the wall. PFAS is a menace to environment. It binds to soil and water, as I mentioned, but it also bioaccumulates in our bodies, similar to lead. We find it in cord blood, we find it in breast milk. The rain and snow, it's even in our lakes, rivers, and streams, and in our soil. There is no good idea which products have it, because honestly, we don't have a way of knowing which products are sold in our country, in our state, that have or don't have PFAS, what types of PFAS they are, and how detrimental they are to human health. That's why my bill also includes language for disclosure. Consumers should be allowed to make a choice and have the freedom to choose whether or not they want to be exposed to these chemicals. Lastly, I want to point to you that on November 17th of 2022, this is a week after the state of California sued over 100 manufacturers of PFAS, Industry Today released an article titled, "Manufacturers Beware of Forever Chemicals." Litigation is what it's really all about. And it says, if you manufacture goods that require repellents to water, soil, oil in the lake, the chances are you may be using PFAS. And if you have PFAS in your operation, you could very well find yourself caught in the crosshairs in the next PFAS lawsuit. The writing is on the wall in the industry. Mr. Chair, I have some testifiers that I want to allow to speak, but before I yield my time, in this particular committee, I want to address an issue that's going on in Minnesota. PFAS is found in drinking water at the source. Chair Stevenson, in Coon Rapids, there are four types of PFAS that have been detected in the drinking water in Coon Rapids. Representative O'Driscoll, in Sartell, there's one. Representative Bierman, Apple Valley has four different types of PFAS in the drinking water. Representative Cha, you have 10.
I know.
Representative Doubt, there are five in Princeton and one in Zimmerman. Representative Dotseth, there are six in Cloquet. Representative Freiberg, Golden Valley gets their water from Minneapolis, where there's three. Representative Cleavorn, in Plymouth, there's seven. Representative Kegel, there's three in Fridley. Representative Kraft, there's 10 in St. Louis Park. Representative Liebling, there's four in Rochester. Representative New Brindley, there's four in Lindstrom. Representative Niska, there's six in Ramsey. Representative Perryman, there's nine. And Representative Tabke, there's eight in Shakopee. Representative Bierman, Representative Cha, Representative Perryman, and Representative Tabke, you actually have cities where the drinking water standards exceed the EPA limits right now. There are 26 states that have limits that exceed what the EPA would say to be safe. But honestly, as the EPA is about to roll out a new amount of standards, those are only going to go up in the number of cities that have concern. Next, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers to have a conversation about what PFAS means to them.
All right. We'll first turn to Amara Strandy. Let's come forward, state your name for the record, and proceed to your testimony.
Hello, Chair Stevenson and members of the committee. My name is Amara Strandy, and at the age of 15, I was diagnosed with stage 4 fibrolamellar hepatocellular carcinoma, an incredibly rare form of liver cancer. Due to its rarity and low survival rate, there is no standardized form of systemic treatment other than surgery. There are no curative options, no roadmap, and no plan. I've had over 20 surgeries, including two liver resections and one open chest surgery. My first tumor weighed in at a hefty 15 pounds, putting me in a coma that lasted over a month. While my body underwent the horrors of surgery, kidney failure, and over 75% of my liver removed, my mind went through a series of never-ending nightmares. I experienced PTSD, and I'm haunted by scars on my body that total more than 4 feet. Now, at the age of 20, 2022 was the year my cancer became unstoppable. Last spring, I learned that all four tumors removed from a previous surgery grew back, now worse than ever before. The tumor in the right arm brachial plexus grew back, wrapping around the upper right side of my chest, fracturing my first and third rib, with additional tumors grown next to my heart. The pain in my right hand is excruciating, and little can be done to subside it. I can no longer move my right arm, hand, and fingers. I can no longer braid my hair or play the piano as I once could. They can't do surgery this time. There are no more treatments to try. My life is a product of toxins. I was exposed to these harmful chemicals through no fault of my own. And as a result, I will die with this cancer. I want to warn you of the realities faced by countless Minnesotans as a direct result of forever chemicals. I want you to know the story of a community affected by forever chemicals. I am here to advocate for new legislation to protect my community from these toxic chemicals found in products that they bring. I'm here to advocate for new legislation to protect my community from these toxic chemicals found in the products they bring into their homes. My story is not unique. I have seen neighbors and friends who have also been affected by these toxic chemicals, and it's time for action. At the beginning of 2020, during my senior year at Tartan High School, four students in my senior class had a parent die from cancer. By then, I had learned I wasn't the only student who underwent or was living through a cancer diagnosis. In 2018, an article in the Sydney Morning Herald found that over the past 15 years, 21 students at Tartan High School were diagnosed with cancer. At this rate, at least one student at Tartan will be diagnosed with cancer each year. As one of those 21 cancer patients, I saw the need and I developed a peer-led cancer support group for my school. I am stunned that burying a classmate or their loved one was a regular occurrence. As I grew older, I learned it had been the norm in my community for the past 20 years. "Don't drink the 3M cancer water," was the running joke at my high school. We all knew of the dumped toxic chemicals plaguing our drinking water. We all knew cancer was affecting our community to a disturbing degree. Yet, only until recently, has there been an attempt to hold billion-dollar corporations accountable. We now understand the culprit of our needless suffering found in the water are PFAS chemicals. Those same chemicals are found in so many products we use every day. Despite being dangerous to public health, companies knowingly sell these products to consumers. These chemicals are used in everyday objects such as baby toys, cosmetics, cookware, and stain-resistant fabric treatments. People are subjected to these dangerous chemicals unknowingly. It's a repeated offense, and I am a witness to this crime that has changed the direction of my life and the lives of everyone around me. PFAS have created a public health crisis that has plagued my community for nearly 60 years. Over the years, 3M gave me the impression that they solve what is hard. 3M, the birthplace of forever chemicals, has been solving hard things for decades. We can solve hard things too. Banning PFAS in non-essential products will be hard. Working together with corporations like 3M, who promoted solving what's hard, Minnesota can rise to the occasion as a leader in solving the PFAS crisis. Now is our chance to shine. Chair Stevenson and members of the committee, please hear my voice and the voices of my community by supporting these bills to stop the dangerous and lethal presence of PFAS. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming today and sharing your story. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our next testifier is Scott Rosochowski. I think I got that wrong.
Rosa Hosky for the record. Chair Stevenson, members of the committee, my name is Scott Rosa Hosky, and as a previous submarine nuclear electrician, I'm here today to present testimony on the dangers of PFAS and its link with the internal components of electrical systems. First, I really want to bring to your attention two quotes that I believe will help encourage this legislation. The first is, procedures are written in blood. I bring this one to your attention because we in the field of maintenance, whether it be electrical, plumbing, carpentry, or any other trade, understand that while procedures or safety precautions are there, the only reason they exist is because someone shed blood before us. The other one is, success teaches us nothing, only failure teaches. This one's near and dear to my heart, because it comes from the father of the naval nuclear program, and it is important to bring to your attention. This legislation has proved that the necessity for this legislation has proved that we have failed in the past, and we need to learn from these failures. The opponents of this bill are asking internal components be exempt, based on the argument that people don't come in contact with these components. I can assure you, this is false. People whose livelihood relies digging around in these internal components are additional testimony to this. They also don't account for the fact when these components are thrown away, they're now in dumps, which leak into our groundwater, poisoning our citizens. Simply put, out of sight, out of mind does not protect us from PFAS. We have the ability here to minimize the impact of this dangerous chemical and to prevent this from further damaging our society. I would also like to state that because the federal government has yet to regulate this chemical, does not mean we should ignore the core issue here and protect our citizens. So finally, I ask this committee to prevent future procedures from being written in blood and to learn from our failures, support this legislation. Thank you for your time and willingness to hear this testimony.
Thank you. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you.
Our next testifier is Jennifer DeJournette. Come forward, state your name for the record, proceed to your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Jennifer DeJournette. Chair Stevenson and members, my name is Jennifer DeJournette. For over a decade, I've worked to protect natural resources in Minnesota so they can be appreciated and enjoyed by Minnesotans today and in the future. I'm speaking on behalf of both bills, House File 1000 and House File 552 today, because the economic impact of non-essential use of the class of chemicals commonly known as PFAS is becoming an economic train wreck for our state and is being paid for by our hardworking taxpayers. Everyday Minnesotans like Amara Strandy and her family are suffering with and are being burdened with the devastating health care impacts and costs. Early estimates of the cost of removing PFAS from drinking water nationwide are $400 billion, dwarfing the cost of settlements and cleanup costs from the environmental contamination like asbestos and lead pipes. That doesn't even account for the cleaning PFAS out of non-drinking water contamination. In fiscal year 2021 alone, the Department of Defense predicted it would need more than $2.1 billion for cleaning up PFAS and doing investigations. But the Government Accounting Office in 2021's report shows that even that funding would fall short of what was needed. In Minnesota, we are spending tens of millions of dollars to clean up PFAS, only to allow the same area to be recontaminated, which will clearly result in more taxpayers' hard-earned dollars gone to waste. The foo-foo fairy dust of the endless taxpayer money tree does not exist. Continually paying to clean up a mess but refusing to limit the introduction of that same troublesome chemical is a taxpayer and healthcare boondoggle that no one can afford and no one should tolerate. No one is saying ban all products in all capacities. If a product is essential to the health and safety of Minnesotans, such as a medical device like a stent, a mechanical opponent to keep an airplane in the air, and there is no safe, proven alternative, then it would not be banned. The point is to protect consumers where possible and allow consumers to be informed on what they're purchasing. That's just common sense. But if it is not essential, like toilet paper, makeup, recreational clothing, or even pizza delivery boxes, why is PFAS in it anyway? Is that even necessary? Do we really need toys for kids with PFAS, only for it to be eventually disposed and dumped in our landfills for the hard-working taxpayer to clean up again and again and again until there is the political will to do something about it? I believe common-sense Minnesotans like myself agree that now that we know the environmental, healthcare, and economic impacts, we need to be good stewards and demand better. Large companies with economic interests will request that we wait for the federal government to act. But let's be clear, that is simply a delay tactic. It is not in Minnesota's best interest to wait or look to the large, slow-moving federal government to solve Minnesota's problems. Nor do we need to wait for the federal government to figure it out for us. We can and we should come to a common sense agreement. We will be told that we must give more time for the products containing this man-made chemical to be sold to unsuspecting consumers because that is in the economic best interest of the companies that are selling or producing that product. But is that in the best interest of our fellow Minnesotans, that mom going to the store, who's that unsuspecting consumer who doesn't even have a label on the product to note that PFAS is in the product she is buying? The truth is, if we do not act, we will become the dumping ground for these products. Manufacturers that can't sell items in states that are banning non-essential use of products with PFAS will flood the markets in states that aren't banned, putting consumers at risk and ultimately continuing to waste our taxpayer dollars because Minnesotans will be stuck with a bill to clean it up and pay for the associated healthcare costs. And that did happen before. When California banned BPA and baby bottles, those bottles were then shipped to Arizona to sell. Protecting Minnesota consumers is not a partisan issue, no matter your political perspective. Protecting our fellow Minnesotans from devastating cleanup costs and healthcare consequences while being a faithful steward of our natural resources is something that we all believe in. This is a Minnesota common sense value that we all share, and that is why we must support both of these bills. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next, we have Andrea Lovell.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, members of the committee. My name is Andrea Lovell. I'm the legislative director at Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. I am also a small business owner. I have a cottage food license, and I have a business selling artisan cookies named after my daughter, Phoebe, or BB's Treats. I asked staff to give you each a cookie, so you should have one in front of you. They are cardamom cookies with almond meringue icing. They are delicious. I use organic ingredients to make them, and I can accommodate all allergies. I use separate pans and equipment to be able to accommodate nut allergies, dairy allergies, wheat allergies, and celiac disease. They are a work of my heart, and I'm proud to have been able to turn my side hobby into a business. Each cookie takes me about 15 minutes, so I don't usually do orders during legislative session because I'm here advocating for bills like the ban of PFAS and non-essential items. I can guarantee you that the cookies in front of you are organic and delicious and that I follow all food safety guidelines outlined in cottage food law. I can even guarantee you that my products are allergen-free if you request it from me. I can't guarantee you that they are PFAS-free because I don't know if PFAS is in my sheet pans, my parchment paper, my cookie cutters, my mixing bowls, my KitchenAid mixer, my oven, my rolling pin, my food safe paint brushes, or the wrapping I purchased from Michael's to keep them fresh and free from cross-contamination. And really, nobody can right now. That's how big this problem is. Right now, PFAS is entering our bodies all the time, but we don't know specifically how and how much. We need you to act now for small business owners like me and our customers. We can't guarantee that our products are PFAS-free until manufacturers guarantee our supplies are PFAS-free, or at bare minimum, disclose that there's PFAS in them. This isn't the first toxic chemical that will go through MPCA's rulemaking process. Our legal experts at MCEA have reviewed the bill language and ensure you that they comply with commerce laws and are consistent with the way we've banned toxic chemicals in the past. The only thing left is the political will to do it. Please pass a ban on non-essential uses of PFAS and public disclosure on these dangerous toxic chemicals. And I hope you enjoy the cookies. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Tony Quillis. Willis, come forward, state your name for the record, proceed your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis, and I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for the opportunity to make a couple of comments on House File 552, which is the Juvenile Products Bill, and then House File 1000. Mr. Chairman, on the Juvenile Products Bill, House File 552, I have to thank Representative Katiza Watoon, who's had been a very open door policy to have some conversations with me. And there are three other states, Mr. Chairman, that have done that. We're just trying to get some consistency and clarity to prevent duplication when we went through. And in House File 552, the definitions of intentionally added, further it talks about what's not included in children's products, so try and get some clarity and a definition there on direct contact. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, as we pass things in 325, we always have what we call the sell-through provision. So she's been very great about talking about those provisions with me. Mr. Chairman, in regards to House File 1000, businesses want to try and ensure consistency and uniformity in regulations. And when we talk about PFAS, so we can prevent a patchwork of rules and regulations, reporting requirements, and product prohibitions. If you, in this chemical class, there are 4,000 chemicals in this chemical class. So picture an oval with 4,000 lines coming out of it. Not all of them are hazardous, and they all have different properties and characteristics. Some of them never come in contact with humans. So when you regulate this chemical as a one-size-fits-all, it becomes confusing and troubling for people that are going to have to meet these reporting requirements. The breadth and depth of what we're talking about here for the reporting requirements, I'm going to use the low estimates of 9 to 12,000 uses of this product. And some of the uses are in ATVs, boats, electric vehicles, solar panels, wind turbines, medical devices, and in the semiconductor industry. And businesses, especially small to medium-sized businesses, are going to have to check with numerous suppliers to find something as small as a washer or a gasket. And think of components that have as many as over 100 components in it. Because there's no de minimis here, just a trace is going to trigger those reporting requirements, Mr. Chairman. And when that data comes in, there's no protection of that data for proprietary information or confidential business information. Again, we're just trying to find some consistency and prevent patchwork among rules and regulations. There are legislation moving through this body as well as in other states where intentionally different, the definition is different in here than in other bills. The definition of PFAS itself is different in here than in other bills in this legislature as well as in other states. Mr. Chairman, everybody you tends to use Maine as the reference here, and when they did that January 1st of this year, the reporting requirements were supposed to start. 2,000 exemptions were granted to businesses because they're trying to clarify the ranges and what their reporting requirements entail. There's complex supply chains that go around the globe. There's confidentiality agreements that's preventing folks that use this product from trying to get the information that's going to be required. And there's not testing protocols for all of these 9 to 12,000 uses. And the lack of lab capacity, if there is protocols for them, is a problem. So, Mr. Chairman, that's in the reporting requirement. When we talk about the prohibitions and the bans, trying to work with Representative Brand, who's been also gracious in his time to have some conversations with me so that we don't have duplication and be consistent, to work through those product ban areas and make sure that those dates match up with other states. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, the Interstate Chemical Clearinghouse, which is what Minnesota is also a member of, is trying to establish a reporting portal right now, Mr. Chairman, so that all states don't have different reporting requirements and times. We can all go into one portal, Mr. Chairman. So I just wanted to point that out to you. Thank you for the time, Mr. Chairman, and I'll stick around if there's any questions.
Thank you. Last, we have Jim Blackford. Come forward, state your name for the record, and proceed to your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. There should be my information in each of your packets. It has my name in the upper left-hand corner, James M. Blackford. And there's four pages of written information that I'm not going to cover because you can look at it later. I'll try to cover the high points of it. And then also two maps in the back that show where our home is relative to the landfill. But I have some extremely important information for you that I think you will all be interested in. And if I get a little wound up, please accept my apologies in advance, because I have been, and my family has been, in a 17-year battle with the state of Minnesota on PSC pollution. We built our home, our dream home, in Lake Elmo, we thought a safe distance away from a landfill that was put in after my wife's family bought the land. So we were there first. The landfill came in. The landfill was done in the 60s, along the same timeline the 35W bridge was done by the federal government. The landfill was approved by the state of Minnesota MPCA as SW1, solid waste landfill number one, the first landfill authorized by the state of Minnesota. It was built in a chain of lakes area in a gravel pit that was filled with water. The MPCA has pictures of this landfill being filled in with trash into standing groundwater. The state knew what was happening, and they did nothing. Then when it immediately leaked, they did nothing. They let it continue to leak off the site. They brought in city water to people, and they tried various things. But the MPCA knew the problems and did nothing. I want you all to know that to me, the MPCA, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, is the Minnesota Pollution Agency based on what they did at the Washington County landfill site. So they allowed a landfill to be placed. So they allowed it to be engineered and placed in standing groundwater in a chain of lakes area with no bottom to it, no liner. That's what they agreed to. That's the state of Minnesota directly. The 35W bridge was built by the federal government, designed by an engineering firm, and built by another contractor. The state of Minnesota was not involved. The Washington County landfill was directly involved by the MPCA of the state of Minnesota since the very beginning. Then when it started to leak, they thought, okay, let's stop it from leaking. Let's put a cap over it. Well, when you have trash in groundwater, you can't stop the spreading of the pollution. And while at the same time, they never figured out what was in the landfill, even though PFCs are patented chemicals by 3M produced in great quantity, the state of Minnesota had no idea they were there or in the Oakdale site just a mile or two away. The state of Minnesota was clueless as to these toxic chemicals in landfills, again, patented products made in huge quantities by 3M. And 3M never disclosed to the state that those chemicals were there. I have never seen any proof that 3M told the state. In fact, I have internal documents of 3M that say they have disclosed to the state of Minnesota everything they knew about the Oakdale disposal site, a mile and a half away from the Lake Elmo, Washington County landfill. Why does this all matter? Because we had our water tested by the state of Minnesota regular basis, our well water, to be sure it wasn't polluted. We are the closest well on the east side of the landfill. There's nobody closer on the east side.
Mr. Blackford, if you could try and wrap up the next 30 seconds or so. We do have your packet. Your information is in all members' packets, so they do have that.
I will try to, but the state of Minnesota has tried to stomp on the Blackford family for 17 years. And we still do not have city water after 17 years, when everyone else around the landfill has city water, when everyone around the Oakdale landfill site has city water. But the key thing here is that they tested our water and said it was safe. The state of Minnesota, I have the documentation. It was not safe. We were drinking PFCs. If you look at the articles I mentioned, Ingrid Verhoeven from the state of Minnesota said, we actually sent pollution to the Blackford home. They did pump out an aeration for VOCs, and they actually sent pollution to the Blackford family well. They admitted it. So in 2006, that's when our nightmare began, because we realized when the state told us we were polluted, we've been drinking polluted water for all those years. And when the state, okay, one more very important point. When the state remediated, when the state of Minnesota remediated the landfill in 2009, 2010, they pumped out this concentrated PFC-laden water at the bottom of the landfill, brought it over to the Oakdale site where they were already doing pump out and sending PFCs to the Minnesota waste plant in Pig's Eye. They spread this stuff into the Mississippi River directly because the Minnesota waste plant cannot handle it. I just want you all to be aware of this really critical document. It's referenced in my comments. It's a 100-page document prepared by the MPC in February 2006.
And we have your document, so we will take a look at it, but I have to ask you to wrap up now because we have a lot of bills on the agenda today and members need to have a chance to discuss it. So thank you for coming.
We want city water. We deserve city water. The MPC will not bring city water to our home. We are the only home in that entire area by around the landfills that does not have city water. The state of Minnesota has done terrible things to us, and it has to be remedied.
Thank you, sir. We'll now move to member discussion and questions to the bill. Discussion to the bill. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. I'm Representative Cha, I represent Woodbury 47B. I moved to Woodbury in 1996. Discovery didn't happen until 2003, you know? And so I want to thank you, Representative Brand, for bringing this forward. It's been a long time waiting. It's been 20 years and maybe 70 years if you talk about 1940s and 50s. So I appreciate your leadership in this space. You know, we have tested 3,860 wells, 1,481 of those wells. That's 38% of these private wells are contaminated. We have 19 city wells, which six has been shut down. So this is a serious issue for the East Metro, and thank you for your leadership in the space.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Branch, just a couple of questions to kind of put some of this into scope, if we could. We have testimony that was brought forward today by one of the testifiers that talked about the multiple bills, and we do have another bill on the agenda today that deals with PFAS. How are you going to be able to reconcile the different definitions of this so that the manufacturers of the various products are going to be able to know what rules they should be following?
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Driscoll, I've actually vetted this bill through the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. In the last committee stop, we've actually changed some of the bill to make it easier to implement for Minnesota. And so this is a Minnesota bill. I'm not so much worried about what other states are doing. The federal government refuses to act on things like this, despite the fact that even the EPA knows this is a big issue. We have a chance in here in Minnesota to lead, and we have to lead, and we have to use the definitions that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency are going to use. And so they're here if they want to come down and testify and clarify some of that stuff. But essentially, this bill is meant for the Minnesota consumer.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Brandt, I apologize if I wasn't clear. I wasn't referring to other states and what they're doing. I was referring to the other bills. And we actually do have another bill on the agenda today, House File 552, that deals with those. And I believe the testifier is referencing the fact that within our own legislature, we have multiple different definitions. How do we reconcile those definitions so that folks know what rules they should be playing under?
Representative Brand.
Yeah, thank you for the clarification, Mr. Chair, and thank you for clarifying that, Representative Driscoll. You know, I think with the conversations about the definitions and that sort of thing, I think that that's something that we can work with just to make sure that we are defining things appropriately and defining things holistically in this conversation in this space here at the legislature. So I'll work with the chair or the authors, rather, of the other bills to make sure that we've got one cohesive definition for all of these types of things and in conjunction with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Brandt, you referenced that penalties might be would be levied in here under Minnesota Statute 115.071 and 116.072. Well, some of the testifiers were testifying. I looked up those laws. I'm not quite sure how they apply in this situation. Could you help me to understand for those who are not compliant, how the penalties would be levied against them under those two statutes?
For that, I would ask thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Driscoll. What I would do is I would ask the MPCA to come down because they're fluent in those types of statutes.
We have someone from the PCA here today? Does not appear that we have anyone from the PCA here today. Representative Driscoll, do you want to direct that question elsewhere?
I don't know that we have anyone else. The bill author had suggested that they were the source authority, so I will defer to him on who he's been in counsel with on these. But I do have a couple of other questions, Mr. Chair.
Why don't you proceed to your next question, then, Representative Driscoll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next question that I have is, you know, again, if this bill passes out of committee today and House File 552 passes out of committee today, at what point are we going to be able to, with two different bills, get the reconciliation of the various definitions and the different fines? Because some of this is, where you're at, is global, and some of these other bills are product specific. So what happens if there's a conflict in the global bill that you're talking about versus something that's in the specific? When do we get those things reconciled in order to be able to, again, let consumers know what's going on, and to let the manufacturers and the retailers who may be impugned in this because they are knowingly or unknowingly offering products because they can't trace back the source either.
Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Driscoll. What I would say is the next stop for this bill is actually back in the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, which has the jurisdiction of course, the MPCA.
I think we're actually headed to health next. This bill's headed to health next, but I think...
Sorry.
Well, that was the motion we made at the beginning.
Okay.
We need to change the motion?
Yes, it should go to...
Back to environment?
Environment.
Okay. When we renew the motion, we'll make it to go back to environment.
Thank you.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, Mr. Chair, I do believe that we're moving bills rather quickly here, and I asked three simple questions, and we haven't been able to get answers to those. So, again, my hope is that as we continue on, that this is a very serious matter. It was established that many members in this committee have PFAS issues with their water, and I just want to make sure that those who are affected by this know the rules that they're going to need to be playing by. Establishing the rules of the game are very, very important. So I'm concerned about the fact that we maybe don't have this one ready to move to for sure the floor. I'm not sure what's going to happen in an environment committee, but. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, and Representative Driscoll, I appreciate your concern. You know, this fundamentally is more of an environment bill. It's in the environment chapter of law, aimed from the environment committee, going back to the environment committee. We do need to take a look at it because it has commerce implications. But I think that those are discussions that are probably, especially in terms when we're talking about how we're defining things in the environmental chapter of law, that the environment committee is probably best suited to look at. So we will... send it back there and trust that our friends in the Environment Committee will do the good work that needs to be done. Representative Niska, briefly?
Yeah, yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to just flag a thing, a concern I have that I think does relate specifically to the commerce application of this. Representative Brand, on page 5, starting in line 12, there's two provisions that say that require the manufacturer to notify persons who sell or offer for sale a product prohibited under subdivisions 2 or 3 to notify them, and then in clause E it says the commissioner may notify persons who sell or offer for sale, and sellers are the ones who are actually prohibited from selling products. And so I'm concerned that we might have sellers who don't receive any notification from the manufacturer, and then if the commissioner is only optionally required to make that notification, that we may end up with unwitting violators of the law that we and so if you want to respond to that, Representative Brand, or just I do want to flag that that's an area that I'm concerned about that relates to the commerce application of this bill.
Okay. Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Niska, I think the biggest problem is we don't know what products that are for sale on the store shelves today that even have it, and so that's, I think, part of the responsibility that manufacturers have to do. But also, as we start knowing more information, as states collect this information, it also is an opportunity for the states like the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to actually reach out to retailers and to reach out to those manufacturers and to say, it has it, unfortunately. That's the biggest thing we as a consumer know less about the products that we're buying than trade organizations do. And I think there's really an opportunity for us to shine some light on that issue, because at the end of the day, this is a very pervasive chemical, and it is something that, you know, until we turn off the tap on this on these chemicals, it's going to continue to go to our landfill. It's going to continue to cause problems for us. And at the end of the day, who's going to pay that? Us, taxpayers of Minnesota. The legislature is going to have to act on spending lots of money to clean up these sites, you know. Representative Chavez was just talking about his community. Well, I named a bunch of communities that get their drinking water that have these PFAS already in it. And it's a concern. It's something that we definitely have to address. When infants are born with it in their blood and in their food, when in the first year they learn how to crawl and walk on carpeting or flooring that has the cleaners that are used on it, when we have the ability to actually change policy going forward in Minnesota to where we can actually address these issues, they're really important. And so, yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things where we're going to have to find out more information. And it's just it's an opportunity for us to communicate back and forth between manufacturers and the retailers to ensure that everybody is aware.
Representative Dotsiff.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and Representative Brand. You touched on, first of all, I have to say I understand the heart behind this bill, and I appreciate you at least bringing this to the table. However, I believe we've got a long way to go with this. You touched earlier about other states. The question I would have is, how does this relate similar to other states? Because we are commerce, and this does affect the commerce in other states as well as internationally. So I think we need to look at the broader view of this and broader picture. Have we given some consideration with that as we move forward?
Representative Brand.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dotsiff, I will tell you there are 31 other states that are in the process of either having committee hearings or enacting legislation specifically dealing with PFAS. This goes to a growing concern we have with the inability of the federal level to get things accomplished. And this is one of those opportunities where it's unfortunately going to be patchwork. But each state has their own right to protect the people of the states that they serve in. And I would say that in Minnesota, until something comes to the federal level that preempts what we are doing, I think it's in our best interests to enact the legislation that we know is going to protect our consumers.
Representative Dotsiff, you have a brief follow-up, and then I'm going to move us to a vote.
Very good. Representative Brand, have we had further discussion with even some of the businesses, even in your own local community as well as outside communities, of how that's going to affect the industry as well?
Very briefly, Representative Brand.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Dotsiff. Yes, I have had conversations with other businesses. What I will tell you is that giving rulemaking authority to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency takes the politics out of it and gives the scientists the opportunity to decide what's best for the people in Minnesota. And so scientists, of course, are going to be the ones at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. They're going to have the final say. And we give rulemaking authority until 2032, so we don't have to rush out. But what we have the opportunity to do is actually to address the issues. We have more capacity than the two people in Maine that are in charge of implementing this right now. We have much more capacity than that here in Minnesota. And so I look at this as an opportunity to actually get going on this and actually doing good for the people of Minnesota.
Okay. And with that, we're running well behind schedule, so we're going to move to a vote on this bill. I'm going to make a new motion, that House File 1000 be recommended to be re-referred to the Environment, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 1000 is recommended to be re-referred to the Environment, Finance, and Policy Committee. And we will move next to House File 552 from Representative Katiza Watoon. And Representative Katiza Watoon, like the last bill, I think this bill needs to go to the Environment Committee. So if you wanted to make your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 552 be re-referred to the Environmental and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee.
All right. Representative Katiza Watoon moves House File 552 be recommended to be re-referred to the Environment, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Katiza Watoon, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will open briefly by saying that so many of the testifiers on Representative Brand's bill were also speaking in support of House File 552, so we're not going to ask that they all speak and go through their testimony again, but you can also refer to the letters that have been submitted in your packets, and it will save us a little bit of time today. House File 552 is a ban on the usage of PFAS in juvenile products, which are those products created and or targeted to children under the age of 12. The existence of PFAS is wreaking havoc in our soil and water, as we've heard previously, and ongoing exposure can pose myriad health issues. PFAS has been found in breast milk, so those of us who are feeding our children in this way have potentially been transferring this chemical to our babies. As a parent, we don't know what we don't know, and we seek to protect our children from harm. Many of us, myself included, have unknowingly exposed our children to PFAS throughout their childhood via toys, so water, et cetera. And the exposure to PFAS is accumulative, which means that the presence continues to expand and grow in our bodies and then can cause issues like learning disabilities, reduced immune responses, childhood obesity, and type 2 diabetes, as well as cancer. I do appreciate the discussions I've had with some of our Republican members and with the chamber over the past couple of years. And it's my hope that we will be able to move forward in a way that keeps our children safe and healthy, our soil and water clean, and has minimal impact on our economy.
All right. And as Representative Katizu-Tun mentioned, we had consolidated the testimony into the first PFAS bill. So all the, I think some of the testifiers referenced this bill. So we'll move directly to member discussion and questions. Discussion to the bill. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I look through the definitions, I'm wondering, Representative Katizu-Tun, I'm wondering if you can tell us on lines 118 through 121, why are those products not included?
Representative Katizu-Tun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative New Brindley, for that question. I believe that was kind of landed on discussion with some of the advocates and business community. They're also, ideally interacted with less, with younger children in particular, and they're not necessarily products that would be like physically on the child for an extended amount of time. A lot of the changing pads and restraints and high chairs, and it's just a lot more, I think, bodily contact versus some of those technological products that we have excluded from the definition.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can understand that for some of those, but this juvenile product is applying to children under 12 years of age. And so certainly in this day and age, audio, video equipment, I assume that would include headphones, game console, handheld device with a video screen, mouse, keyboard, keypad, and even an adult mattress. It seems like all of those would have a great deal of contact with a child up to 12 years of age. And so I'm just wondering, like, is there a different level of PFAS in those products that would be considered more acceptable? I'm just not really, I understand, you know, for an infant, obviously, that like you said, a changing pad, they would be interacting with a changing pad much more than a screen. But we all know that as kids get older, they're interacting with devices, and a lot of them, and more, unfortunately. But so is there a reason that those would not be included? It seems like a very specific category for the most part that's not included here.
Representative Katizu-Tun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Brindley. I see your point and definitely want to validate your concern. I share some of that. I believe that, you know, within some of the conversations that we had with the business community, this was just a way to find a little bit more common ground. And but I think, you know, if you're interested in working with me on the language in this section a little bit more, we can certainly talk to the business community and see where we land, if we can find some peace in the valley on those exclusions.
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, not necessarily. I think it's curious that this is so dire, but there would be pretty significant exclusions. Thank you.
All right, seeing no further, Representative O'Driscoll, just under the wire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Boy, tell you what, just looking at the two bills, got a couple questions. Representative Katizu-Tun, your bill, 552, lines 118 through 1.21, it says not including medical devices, but I did notice that in the, maybe more just a comment, that in House File 1000, which was just moments ago passed, medical devices are included in that, but medical devices are excluded in House File 552. And I'm also looking, and I believe mattresses, adult mattresses, might be included in one and excluded in the other. So I'm still trying to figure out just exactly how this all applies. Looks like we've got some conflicts here. And again, I'll refer to my previous statement about we really just need to get this thing worked out, and hopefully we can maybe do it in the Environment Committee. I'm trying to keep my comments to the jurisdiction of this committee, although I wasn't asked to. But if you happen to be a medical device manufacturer, sales, or distributor, or one who does adult mattresses, you are probably going to really want to know well, what's in bounds and what's out of bounds, Mr. Chair. So just
I'm
some
happy to make that request now, but happy to turn recognize Representative Kazizi Watum. But again, I think the idea here is that we're looking at these bills really as a secondary committee. The primary committee is the Environment Committee, and a lot of these discussions about what approach to take, how to reconcile the different approaches are probably best suited for the Environment Committee. But with that, Representative Kazizi Watum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. I appreciate your attention to detail between these two bills. I did carry 552 last session, and so I think when we were working through some of the language, I'm not sure if based on input from the Pollution Control Agency, if some of these changes were made that then weren't brought to my attention in my first stop in the Environment Committee. But I am willing to work with Representative Brand, with you, with House Research, to make sure that we do get everything right before these bills would continue on down the road.
Representative Driscoll.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't have any other questions. Again, I just to the point that some of this stuff may be resolved in environment, but everything I stated today really is within the commerce and area of this committee's jurisdiction. Thank you.
All right. And with that, Representative Kazizi Watum renews her motion that House File 552 be recommended to be referred to the Environment, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. House File 552 is recommended to be referred to the Environment, Finance, and Policy Committee. The next item on our agenda today is House File 1100 from Representative Tabke. Representative Tabke, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, yes, I would like to send the bill to the General Register. I forget what the exact wording is. I got to get better at this again.
Representative Tabke moves that House File 1100 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And then you have the A1 amendment. You want to move the A1?
Yes, Mr. Chair, move the A1 amendment, which is a technical correction that refers to Subdivision 1 instead of Subdivision 2 like it does in the bill.
Okay. Any discussion to the A1? Seeing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. A1's adopted. Representative Tabke, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So House File 1100 is a bill that we've been working on for a while to allow there in the past year in 2022, calendar year 2022, over 3,300 vehicles were stolen that were just Kias and Hyundais in the metro itself. And that's an 893% increase in Minneapolis, and that's a huge increase in St. Paul as well. And the reason that Kias and Hyundais are targeted is because they are missing anti-theft devices in the vehicles. And so what this bill does is it takes and requires the manufacturers for vehicles manufactured since January 1 of 2013 to have an anti-theft device placed in the vehicle, and so that it is harder to steal. So what is happening is a lot of folks are stealing these cars and trucks and then committing other crimes with them, and it is a large part of an issue that is going forward. So this will require them to be retrofitted with anti-theft devices as is divided in statute.
All right. And we do have a few people who signed up to testify, starting with Steve Huser from the City of Minneapolis. Doesn't appear to be in the room at the moment. So we will... Unless state your name for the record, proceed to your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Huser, a government relations representative for the City of Minneapolis. The City of Minneapolis wants to thank Representative Tabke for carrying this bill. The Chief O'Hara would have, I think, like to have been able to testify today, and he was able to present some of the information and the experience that the City of Minneapolis has had with this problem earlier today at a press conference. So, you know, I think from the city's perspective, you know, anything that we can do to get at the issue of, you know, these particular models and cars being stolen, it's not just the victims of the crime, but the actual the after effects of the cars being driven through the city streets, the after effects of that, anything we can get at to try and slow down the ability of these cars to be stolen and making it that much easier to steal them is a good thing. So the city would like to lodge our support for this bill and hope that you will pass it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Patrick Hines. State your name for the record. Proceed to your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Patrick Hines with Messerly & Kramer. I'm here on behalf of the Alliance for Automotive Innovation, which represents 39 automobile manufacturers and value chain partners who together produce nearly 98% of all light-duty vehicles sold in the United States. Thank you for the opportunity, Representative Tapke and committee members. Automakers know that consumer safety is a priority. We understand the public safety concerns related to vehicle theft, and we appreciate the interest in the issue. However, we do oppose the bill for one fundamental reason. States should not mandate design requirements for vehicles. Vehicle design, construction, and performance requirements and safety is within the purview of the federal government. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has authority over design, construction, and performance of motor vehicles and motor vehicle equipment. NHTSA has the required expertise to develop these standards, guidance, and regulations for vehicle technology and to assess their safety. If individual states mandate vehicle systems and designs, the industry would be faced with an unworkable patchwork of various state requirements that would bring the industry to a halt. Having said that, it doesn't mean that the automakers are not responding to the serious issues raised here by the bill. The impacted automakers are offering free anti-theft software upgrade to prevent the vehicles from starting during a method of theft that has been shown on social media. We're providing free steering wheel locks to law enforcement agents for distribution to local residents who own or lease affected models. They're also finalizing a program to reimburse consumers for the purchase of any sort of locks or other steering wheel locks. So we understand consumers are impacted by these issues, but the impacted automakers are responding without the need for this legislation. Thank you. I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you. We'll move to member discussion and questions to the bill. Discussion to the bill. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Mr. Fluser would stand for a question.
As he comes down, do you want to
get started?
Yeah.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering.
It's a long walk.
I know. Is it the very back? It's a very easy, quick question. Mr. Fruiser, I'm wondering if you can just tell us how many police officers the city of Minneapolis is currently down. I know it was over 300 at one point. Where are we now?
I think that's pretty far afield from the bill.
Nope. Maybe it is very directly related to the bill.
No, I mean, this is not just a problem in the city of Minneapolis, Representative New Brindley, but I'll let this one question, but we're not going to go into a big discussion about the city of Minneapolis's police count. That's just very far afield from
directly related to the bill.
Well, I disagree. Mr. Huser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, we are under our city charter mandated number of sworn officers. I do not know the number of sworn officers today off the top of my head, so I would not want to put a number on the record that would be inaccurate. Sorry, I just wasn't prepared for that question for today.
Yeah, I you know, this is an issue that's, I mean, my own chief of police, where we have our correct number of police in the city of Coon Rapids, we're also having this problem. So, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I did not actually know that we were going to be hearing a bill on this, but I did see this pop up on Twitter, the issue, just over the weekend, and frankly, I was shocked at what a bizarre take this bill is. It is bizarre. Oh, it is still, I asked somebody else as well, it's still around 300 officers that the city of Minneapolis is down. So, you know, I saw that Mayor Fry had tweeted about this, that manufacturers must be held accountable, which is frankly such a bizarre take. This bill is bizarre. Unfortunately, it is typical that we're going to hold businesses accountable when there is a complete lack of accountability within the criminal justice system. The city of Minneapolis, particularly since they very publicly have advocated for this, they have decimated their police force, and now we're going to hold manufacturers liable for those problems. I mean, it's just really bizarre. This is a very strange piece of legislation that should very obviously be voted against. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tabke.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Brindley. So with this, it just was a coincidence that both the mayors and attorney general did their piece and that this bill was coming forward at the same time on in this hearing today. And so I have to vehemently disagree with you that this is not a bizarre legislation whatsoever. What we do in the state is help to protect consumers. And so consumers are purchasing vehicles that they absolutely expect to have anti-theft devices in them. Like, you expect to have, if somebody's messing with your car, for a horn to beep at that time or for other things to happen that are anti-theft devices. And these two automakers specifically chose to, instead of doing that, what we all expect to have happen, they chose to cut costs and make and savings throughout the 2000s up until the last few years. And they absolutely are doing it the right thing now. But people don't know what is happening. And then, so there are so many vehicles being stolen that they are being dropped from insurance coverage. And so what's happening is that people are buying vehicles that they're now unable to insure. And so this is absolutely a consumer protection thing, and this is what will help a lot of folks in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, just this is a silly bill, frankly. I mean, trying to hold an auto manufacturer accountable for the theft of vehicles is the silliest thing I've ever heard. You know, consumers know what features are on a vehicle when they purchase the vehicle. It's not government's job to – government's job, actually, and it is in our Constitution, is to provide public safety for people. It is literally a requirement in our Constitution that that's government's job. So we should provide public safety and leave the rest of this to other people. And if consumers want to buy a Kia, let them buy it. And I think it's our job to make sure that criminals aren't out on the street. So when we want to start doing that to solve the problem, look me up. I'm eager to help.
This conversation reminds me a lot of the discussion around catalytic converters, where we have a lot of discussion about how we want to do stuff, but not if it hurts businesses, not if there's anything that we want businesses to do, then nope, can't do that, can't go there. And, you know, I got to tell you that outside of this building, when we get outside of this building, when you talk to average people about any of these public safety challenges, they have no sympathy for that particular argument. They think we should be pulling all of the levers and doing everything possible. So,
Mr. Chairman,
have a role to play in this, we should absolutely be doing that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dowd.
If it's okay, I'll give my arguments and you can give yours.
I think that's how a committee works.
Yeah,
we get
great.
To have discussions.
Yeah,
so I'm making my comment now.
Representative
Dowd, you need to wait until you're recognized by the chair.
Could I be recognized, please?
Yes, Representative Dowd.
Thank you. I wasn't sticking up for businesses. I was sticking up for the citizens who are asking us to provide our constitutionally mandated duty to provide public safety to prevent these thefts. That's our job. That's what we should be doing.
Yes, Representative Dowd, we need to do that, and we also need to provide for consumer protections and make sure that our businesses are acting in a responsible way. Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to share one other really odd coincidence, since Representative Tacky brought that up, about the Attorney General's comment and the Mayor's comment on this in the City of Minneapolis. After session on Thursday evening, I drove back to my district and I thought, you know what, it's almost 10 o'clock, and so I turned on the 10 o'clock news, and one of the major news outlets, the broadcast news, like second story in, this bill was being discussed. They were literally showing people in that what cars they were, what vehicles they were, what the issues were, and the like. This is permeating everywhere, and I think we have to also use a little discretion about not trying to amplify the issue by how we promote and how we talk about these things. Public safety and consumer protection are both important items, but I was just, I mean, literally the agenda came out with the bill on there. And 5 hours later, I'm looking at a news story on this. I thought that was just crazy coincidence, Representative Tacky, when you're talking about lots of coincidences that seem to be happening out there these days.
Representative Tacky.
Mr. Chair, Representative Driscoll, I'm not entirely sure what you're getting at there, but with this, there are the reason why this has come up is because there are TikTok and social media videos that are showing people how to exploit this vulnerability in these two vehicles specifically. And so there are that's how people know how to do this, and that's how people know how to get it. And so that was an active choice made by these automakers to not have these anti-theft devices in the vehicles. And so with that, they are their social media accounts that are teaching people how to exploit this, and that's why this is going for, and why we have an 893%. And I guess I should have recognized, but I am surprised that there's pushback against protecting consumers. It's just surprising to me that that's part of this. I understand where you're coming from, and we'll keep moving forward. If there are ways that you can improve it and make it better, I am more than happy always to discuss as it goes to the General Register.
Representative Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I suspect then we'll be seeing a bill coming forward soon that is going after TikTok and some of these other venues for promoting illegal activity and how to engage in those illegal activities here in the state of Minnesota. If you want to talk about consumer protection, that's a great place to start.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, Representative Dutt, you said it. We want to do everything we can to prevent these thefts, and that's exactly what this bill does. Why would you want to limit the tools in the toolbox? And, you know, you, exactly that. That's what this bill does, is it helps prevent the theft of cars. That's it.
Any closing comments, Representative Tabke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to reiterate that there has been explosive growth of theft of both of these types of vehicles, but any vehicle should be equipped with anti-theft devices in that. So that's what we'll make sure happens in the state of Minnesota to protect Minnesotans.
Representative Casizo Batum.
Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call vote on this bill.
Right, we will have a roll call on the bill. I will renew Representative Tabke's motion that this bill be placed, recommended be placed in the General Register. Mr. Dockendorf will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
O'Driscoll, no. Representative Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative Cha.
Aye.
Cha, aye. Representative Doubt.
No.
Doubt, no. Representative Dotseth.
No.
Dotseth, no. Representative Freiberg is excused. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Kraft.
Aye.
Kraft, aye. Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley, no. Representative Niska.
No.
Niska, no. Representative Perryman.
No.
Perryman, no. Representative Farr.
Farr, no.
Farr, no. Representative Tabke.
Yes.
Tabke, aye. That's 9.
With 9 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 1100, as amended, is recommended to be placed on the General Register. Thank you, Representative Tabke. The last item on our agenda today is House File 2175 from Representative Farr. Representative Farr, when you are situated, you may make your motion.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to move House File 2175 to the General Register.
Representative Farr moves House File 2175 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Representative Farr, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. So in the past 10 years, non-mortgage servicers have grown tenfold in market share. That's a 60% increase in that market. And state and federal examinations have shown the need for financial and corporate governance and controls. While there are some standards for VA, Freddie, Fannie, and FHA loans, there are no private servicing standards and no national regulatory enforceable standards in place right now. So what 2175 does is adopts the state regulatory standards for non-bank mortgage servicers. And this is a model from the Conference of State Banks and Servicers and Supervisors, rather. It does two major things. It looks at the financial security and state of those non-mortgage servicers. It looks at things like capital, liquidity, and assets. And then it looks at their boards and their oversight so that they have a board of governance. These standards will provide industry with a uniform set of state requirements while providing regulators with national requirements to examine against. So enacting these standards is good for both Minnesota consumers and businesses. mortgage providers that operate in a safe and sound manner are much better positioned to fulfill the significant requirements associated with servicing mortgage loans. Safety and soundness are fundamental to consumer protection, and businesses benefit from clear and transparent requirements that are consistent across state lines. This bill improves consumer protections by protecting the public from financial crime and increasing the safety of the customer and guaranteeing adequate capitalization of these licensees. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Farr. We do have Mr. Kelly here from the department. Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Briefly, for the record, my name is John Kelly. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Commerce. We thank Representative Farr for bringing this bill forward. This is a department policy bill. As the representative mentioned, this is a model act from the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, so that is the state banking regulators for all 50 states. The language was worked out with industry as part of the model act process. We think this provides good consumer protection and a reflection of the market as it currently stands in Minnesota and across the country. This bill is moving in North Dakota currently. It's passed in a number of other states, but not yet in the upper Midwest, so we could potentially beat North Dakota if we hurry. Again, we think it's a good bill. I'm joined here by our Deputy Commissioner for Financial Institutions and our Director of Non-Depository Institutions, who worked very closely in CSBS in the development of this bill, if there's any more in-depth questions. But we would appreciate the committee's support on this important consumer protection bill.
Any members of the public wishing to testify as to this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Farr, for bringing this. It's just good to see that we're putting in place some rules to prevent problems before they occur. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion to the bill? Representative Farr, I'll give you the last word then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion. Thank you.
All right. Representative Farr renews his motion that House File 2175 be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 2175 is recommended to be placed on the general register. Thank you, committee members, for excellent work today moving through a lot of bills. We will see you tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. With that, the meeting is adjourned. 6:30. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.